Yeah, guys, thank you so much, and thank you for staying. I know that I'm keeping you up for your from your beer, which will be quite lovely, and with a gnarly piece of software and hardware, let's say. So I'm Lily, and this is a part of my PhD work that I completed a couple of months earlier. I'm a researcher in astrophysics and atmospheric physics, and what we did with a couple of folks back in where I'm coming from, Greece, we made a miniaturized sensor that's used to measure the electric field strength in the atmosphere. And I'll show you in a bit. So a brief agenda of the presentation. So I'm going to do a bit of an intro and discuss a bit the scientific question that was posed in our minds and in our that attracted all the funding for this research to be conducted, and then why we chose open source, which is self-explanatory, let's say, for that case, the sensor assembly and a few testing bits from the sensor, some observations from scientific campaigns that we did throughout all this period, and then our data sharing platforms and what's next and what we hope from the sensor. So a lot going on here, but what I want you to keep in mind is that we're coming from a field of, let's say again, atmospheric physics, and what we were seeing throughout all the years of science is that our experimental data were showing that particles, and particularly ones coming all the way from the Sahara, dust particles, were transported all the way towards Central Europe most of the time, and or all the way from the Atlantic. So we couldn't figure out why that was happening. And we couldn't because our models and our forecasting data models couldn't depict this change. So we were hypothesizing that these particles are moving within a fairly dynamic system, which is our atmosphere, and that we have this vertical electric field that's within the entire spectrum of the atmosphere. And as they were moving within, there was some electric force, most probably, that would act on the particles and make them to, let's say, float within the atmosphere, negate the gravitational force that was acted on the particles. And then another, let's say, after effect of these electrical forces could be that it would orient the particles on the vertical direction, and that would give them even fairly more time within the atmosphere, which was another part of my research back in the PhD days. So in order to have and collect all the data that we could possibly have for our hypotheses, we needed to do some measurements from ground-based sensors, but we also needed and found that the best practice to do was to launch balloons over in the atmosphere, lower atmosphere, with atmospheric electricity sensors and acquire the data that we needed within the layers of the dust particles. So could we verify our hypothesis through the observations? And then we needed new developments in order to do so. So the only way was that, to do all these launches that I talked about before. So let's say why we went for the open source in terms of, you know, all the traditional academic structures that do not allow the scientists to form collaborations, and they not foster, many times they do not foster collaborations between open source practices. And then there's this concern in terms of the researcher personal status and recognition, and that all the open source work that's been done doesn't get recognized as it should be. And again, then there are these biased reward systems that do fog, let's say, the perception of the researchers. And what we wanted to do is exactly that, challenge and create transparency through our work. And what we found up till then concerning the specific sensors was unfortunately fairly closed. So we had a couple of projects which were depicted from publications, you know, the traditional system of the academia to present their results. And these were, for the left-hand side, they were not tested on these balloon-borne platforms that we needed them from. And they were most of the times sketchy, and there were non-existent schematics at all in terms of the sensors, which was pretty bad. And then there were some other stuff that were mostly homebrewed projects, which weren't, let's say, tethered to our applications for the measurements, or that they weren't sensitive to the electric fields that we wanted to measure. So these two on the right-hand side are both very cool projects, and we used a lot of their, let's say, bases for our projects. So again, cool ones, but not the exact one that we wanted for the data in the research field. So a few words about the sensor. We are calling it a mini-mule, which is a miniaturized version of a commercial field mill electrometer. That's what they are called. And what it actually does in the principle of operation is that you have a fan with two vanes that they're periodically screening a sensing electrode on the bottom side of the fan. And this what does is that it induces charges on the effective area of the electrode, and this time-resolved charge creates and induces on its turn an induced current. And that's what we measure with the sensor, and the internal processing and the data for the sensor are amplified, and then we get the measured voltage, which is twice the amplified output voltage from each of the coupled electrodes. For the latest version of the sensor, we were using a DC brushless motor, which was used and the speed controlled respectively in order to minimize the electromagnetic interference in our system and the circuitry. And then we also integrated gyro, three-axis gyroscope for the rotational position of the sensor. So we were trying to use as low RPMs as possible for the optimal response of the electrometer. On the right-hand side, that's the exploded view of the sensor. It was used in, we were using layers. So we have like the cover plate, which unfortunately you can see here because it's shielded by the electrode view for the PDF. And then we have the motor and the vanes that I told you about. And then we have the motor mount and the back plate, which was all cut in aluminum for sturdy purposes. And then we have the intermediate PCB with the electronics of the sensor. So it was ADC, it was controlled by an analog to digital microcontroller. And we used a serial transmission for the data. So it was all assembled in the institute with the two guys that I showed you before. And that's the final result for the sensor. It's quite a small and robust sensor, like 8 centimeters at each side. And we have used the thermal shielding because, you know, as you go up within the atmosphere, the temperature drastically falls. And we needed to shield our electronics and the battery supply. And what it does is that I said it measures the electric field strength with the altitude. So the pros for the sensor was that it was easy to reproduce. It's a fairly low-cost sensor with all its the hardware and the electronic components. It's lightweight and it's disposable, which is it's a bit of a problem because you have, you know, all these metallic parts and all these circuitry that are going into the ocean most of the times. And they are not retrievable because, you know, the cost of getting it, it's quite larger than the sensor itself. So we will jump to another version, which is going to be not biodegradable, but definitely with less metallic structures. And hopefully it will be sturdy enough for the measurements that we would like to do. And same validation methods. So on the cons, it had these bulky electronics because it was an implementation on a PhD level, and we had the minimal amount of knowledge for this for this project, but hopefully it's going to get better and better with SMDs and stuff. So what it does in scientific terms, it slightly overestimates the electric field, because as the sensor, you know, it's actually hanging from this balloon, and you have all these winds and shears that are hitting it as it goes up. So we have parasitic electric fields that can be detected from the motion of the sensor. But we are using a rotation, the rotation of the sensor, to minimize this effect. And it has, unfortunately, a limited operation temperature at minus 50 degrees. It can mostly operate at this specific version on dry conditions. So if you have like heavy rain conditions, it's going to be heavily biased in terms of the output. But that's that can be fixed easily. And it has a maximum altitude of about 16 kilometers, which was in the atmosphere again, which was fairly biased by the battery level freeze due to the decreasing temperature. So it's a sensor. You have to do all sorts of calibrations to be ready and robust for the measurements that you're taking. So we had a hard vibration test. We were actually, you know, moving the sensor around and getting the data. We had the temperature resilience test, and we tested its response with a commercial, which was well validated instrument, and they had similar responses, pretty good ones. And again, we put it on different conditions. And the most, you know, famous, let's say, setup for calibration of such sensors is that you're putting them like in two parallel plates, and you're using a fixed voltage between the plates, and you are securing the sensor in order to measure this fixed voltage that you have and to control the output. So that was the standard calibration setup. And it's also, since it's pretty small and it doesn't have, you know, all these complex